This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live. We're live here on Instagram and on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet. Dr. Jeff here for your pets. Anything you want to talk about, now is the time to ask. I'm getting some really, really great questions lately, and there's some things I want to talk about as well. Victoria, how are you? Hope you're feeling good. And let me just wave to everybody. So how do you get a hold of me? 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. That is toll-free here on Pet Life Radio. On Instagram, you're here. So we're going to say, Todd, you all have to do is just say hello and like to hear from you, get your questions ready. Likewise, here on Pet Life Radio. So, you know, one of the things that we'll start talking about, and if a good question comes up, we can always, you know, I have no real agenda. A lot of things I want to talk about. First of all, hope everybody had a good week. I had a case that is kind of still going on. And I realized that there are a lot of, you know, especially now with social media, we talk about, you know, often talk about Dr. Google and how, you know, some of the information we get on Dr. Google may not be the best, you know, but it is what it is. So the best thing about being a vet, oh boy, you know, it depends who you ask. I got to say something. But so I was talking to one of my classmates from vet school, and I was in, you know, obviously, in a sense, I guess any school, I would like to hear, it's kind of like a clique in high school. You know, you have your friends, you hang out with your, you know, the same people mostly, and it's fun. So I had a clique. I'll admit it. I was part of a clique. And every one of my friends, there are about six or seven of us, every single one of those guys, except me, has already retired. Now some first, you know, started cutting back. And it was so interesting because when I talked to them, they talked about that it was becoming a grind. And, you know, when I hear about that, when I lecture also, and I hear people, it doesn't mean be a veteran, I'm talking about any job. When it becomes a grind, that means you're doing things as part of your daily routine that you really don't love to do. Because if you're doing things you love to do all the time, every day, then I just don't see it becoming a grind. And again, it's usually there are so many, many, you know, issues like this where people are, they do what they don't like. Ah, this is what I always recommend. When you're in your career, whether it's early in your career, anytime, start marking down, start saving the things you like to do. Okay. And then just keep doing them. But more importantly is also start to identify those things you don't like to do. And those are the things you start to delegate. You give them to somebody else to do, whatever it is, whether it's the bookkeeping, whether it's the management, whether in medicine, whether it's certain parts of medicine that I just don't enjoy that much, I'm going to refer it. Or if I have an associate, I'll have my associate do it. Just continue to do what you love to do. And when you do that, how do you burn out? I just don't see it. Now, some of them said, no, I loved it. I still love it. But I have other things I want to do in my life. They want to travel. I mean, I get that. I kind of want to do that too. But I don't know if my problem is, and I guess it's, I don't know, it's a sick problem in a way. I'm so unhappy with some of my colleagues out there, or my clients aren't happy with them, that I feel that if I go someplace, I'm gone for a week or two, I think I deserve it at this time. It's been 40 years. I feel sorry for my patients. I honestly, and my clients. So I don't want to leave them because they won't have anybody. Even when I was on safari a couple of years ago, I was, you know, I'm AirVet, my telemedicine platform. I was actually doing virtual visits from 10,000 miles away, whatever it was. People thought I was nuts. There I am in that Jeep. I'm bouncing around and I got my phone and I'm doing a live video consult. So what I love about being a veterinarian is that there are so many things that you can do. And it's such a wide variety of different things within the profession. I mean, you can do research. You can work on the business side. You can obviously work on the hospital side. Within the hospital side, there are so many disciplines that you can work. It would be hard for someone, I think, if you love animals, to not find your niche, not find something of the many opportunities you have within the profession to do something really cool that you really love to do and keep doing it. And it is so varied that I've known people that started out in the equine world and now are doing small animal. People like my very friend, good friend and colleague, Dr. Judy Aronson, who left practice, but she went into industry and she worked with one of the labs, IDEX Laboratory, for years and years and years. So that is the beauty of the profession. There are so many different things to do. Now, the question also was, what does a guy like me, just a regular kind of guy, feed his dogs? Well, so I don't know about the status, but with your status, feed his dogs. So years ago, I'm sure you've all heard of Hill's Science Diet. One of my representatives, who was a bigwig in Hill's, his name was Dave Geyer, left Hill's to start a new food company with a smaller group that they felt that it was even better quality, more structured for different needs of different dogs, whether it's active dogs, whether it's dogs that are overweight, et cetera. And they called it, at the time, this was the new thing, iVet. So I have been a friend of Dave's forever. And ever since I started feeding my dogs iVet, they just like it. They really like it a lot. Now, of course, when I had my Optima, my freeze-dried food, I fed some of that too, because it was mine. But not doing that anymore. And I really, you know, as I said, have I ever tasted the food? No. So can I vouch for the food? No. But with the criteria that I always tell pet owners to deal with, it's, first of all, do they like it? Yes, my dogs love it. Do they have a lot of energy? Yes, they have lots of energy. Do they have good form stool? Yes, they have good form stool. Do they have a nice shiny coat? Yes, they have a nice shiny coat. Why would I want to switch that? All the criteria that I would like to see in my dogs, they're exhibiting with the iVet. So I just gave. But would I tell anybody that iVet's the only there are so many different foods. As I often say, food is overrated. Overrated in the sense that there is no one food. You can have three different dogs and end up having to feed them three different things because every dog has different needs. Now, again, because one of my dogs is a senior, he gets iVet senior, but the other ones get adult. And there's also adult high energy. There's just a basic adult maintenance. There's adult weight loss. I mean, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for something that fits your needs. And as far as convenience, it's a little expensive, even for me. But the good news is they deliver it to my door. So it's like, I don't have to schlep these big 40-pound bags. And you know what? It's convenient. I can deal with the price. It's not prohibitive, less than some of the competitors out there. So that's kind of what I do. All right. I hope that answers your question, Todd. Irving, Todd, you're planning to be a vet. Well, good. I have now like 4 volunteers. I'm so close to UCLA. So I have a lot of UCLA students. 2 of them that were with me last year already are starting vet school in the fall. And that's thrilling. One started last fall, so she's going into her second year of vet school. And one of my jobs for today is, so funny, I was just talking to my sister, telling her what I got in store for me today. And, you know, of course, I start my show here at 9, and then I usually stick around a little longer, then I have to walk my dogs. But one of my volunteers from last year is applying to veterinary school. She's amazing, and I have to write her letter of recommendation. So, I mean, I enjoy doing it, and I think that when you get these really, God bless, when you get these really great students, I really love to work with them and help do what I can. And, I, you know, it's for me, the best part is that when they get into vet school, and then they, especially they do well, they start practicing, they always stay in touch with me, and they are so happy. They say that working with me was such a big help for them just to learn, but just to see how you can pick out the love of what you do and what makes me, after 40 years, still can't wait to go to work tomorrow. So it's really cool. Now, best way to feed cats when it comes to wet food, I get a feedback from friends, I'm confused. Well, first of all, again, I think that cats should have wet food. I do mixed feeding for my cat. I actually do mixed feeding for my dogs too. Means I do a little can, but with cats, I feed them canned in the morning, and then I leave them with dry in the evening, mostly dry. Sometimes if they don't look like they want to eat, I'll give them canned. Now, one of my cats, my big, gorgeous, orange, long-haired tabby named Jazz, Jazz is not a big fan of canned food. I mean, he'll eat it, but I give him dry food, he devours it. So you can't do much. Would I like him? Because cats don't usually drink enough water to have more canned food. And when you feed them canned food, they're getting a lot of water. Of course, I would love to do that, but I can't always guarantee that they're going to eat it. So you got to come up with something. Sometimes I'm moistening the food. I try to entice, but I put some canned food in with the dry food, so he gets that as well. But when it comes to wet food, one thing you do, if you get them to eat wet food, I think it's preferable to have some wet food in the diet, really for the fact of getting more water in their food, because cats are not big water drinkers. Now, could they survive on just dry? Yes, just make sure they have access to water. Hopefully, they'll drink the water, but there's no problem. And those people that say, well, God, canned food and the dry food and the teeth, that's not accurate at all, because regardless of what a pet eats, canned or dry, they're going to get tartar on the same teeth, no difference. So, you know, the only way to really keep the teeth clean or to brush them on a regular basis, that's what we need to do. That's what we need to all get used to doing. And then also have them professionally clean, probably at least once a year after the age of 3 or 4. Now, I was going to talk about a little bit about this case that I had. And with the internet and Dr. Google, there seem to be so many experts around. And I'm dealing with a case where this dog It's an old way older dog, like 11 or 12, and was never spayed, and now has a horrendous pyometra, and it's called a closed pyometra. Closed means she's not draining all that pus out of the uterus. So her uterus, I mean, it comes in segmental, which is what happens, huge pockets. You can see in my ultrasound, the white blood cell count, high normal for dogs, about 17,500, a little higher in a cat, 17,500, and this dog is 56,000. I mean, that's a rip-roaring, horrendous infection, and she's wondering why the dog isn't eating, why the stomach is bloated. So will she take my advice that this is like immediate surgery, which I was prepared to do on Friday? And Friday's my short day. I was going to stay to do the surgery. No. I talked to her pet expert, who is not even a veterinarian, not even an animal person, does some nutrition stuff and has a food company and works with food. And he's telling her that, no, that's non-surgical, that it is something they should do, put it on antibiotics. Whoa. So you got to know, I'm going nuts. So I just made sure in my record, I put very clearly, and also within my technicians, they can hear me, my nurses, that I am highly against doing nothing, that antibiotics are not going to help. This dog needs surgery, and as soon as possible. So that way, legally, I'm protected. And I even told her, I said, you know, this guy who's telling you what to do without a veterinary background, and you're believing him and not a veterinarian, I said, if you want, look, I don't mind second opinions. In fact, I welcome second opinions for a number of reasons. So either if I'm not sure about something, I want a second opinion, because that way I can't lose. If I was right the first time and the specialist agrees with me, I'm a hero. It looks great. If I'm not sure about something, I let them know I would like a second opinion from a specialist, and the specialist finds something that I didn't see or that I missed, then I feel great too, because I'm the one that knew that I wasn't quite clear. I wasn't 100% sure. So I come out smelling like a rose. But if something needs a specialist and I don't send them and it goes sour, right? Or they want a second opinion, I never talk them out of a second opinion, because I can be totally sure about something and the client is not so comfortable, or they don't really want the aspect of surgery, whatever it is, something about the case is not sitting well. Second opinion. But if you're going to go and get a second opinion, don't make it a lateral move. Don't go from one GP to another GP. If you want a second opinion that works, that counts, I'll send you to a specialist. That way, if the specialist agrees with me and says, no, Werber got it right, then I'm great. And if they're not comfortable, all right, and they get a second opinion, then that's great. Because I said, no, get, if you're not comfortable, get a second opinion. What you don't want to do in practice or in anything, when somebody's not comfortable with whoever your expert is, or your doctor, or your mechanic, I don't care what it is, or your construction guy, you know, how many times your general contractors, you never go to the same general contractor twice. And there's a reason for that. So yeah, if you want a second opinion, you know, go get a second opinion. What kinds of spasms? Dogs. Is deadly, and what's the treatment? Muscle spasms are not deadly. They can spasm for a number of reasons. Sometimes they can have like a calcium imbalance. They'll twitch, muscle twitching. Sometimes it could be as a muscle fatigue. So it all depends on what the spasms look like. And tell me more about the dog. Is it an old dog? When do they happen? Is it when the dog is sleeping? You know, these are things that it really makes a difference. What the underlying cause is, and what the dog is doing at the time, what the dog just did at the time. Is it always after major exercise? As I said, is it when they're sleeping? Is it when they get super excited? Is it after they've eaten something? So this is why I tell people all the time, doing tests without a thorough history and physical, you're wasting your money. If your doctor does a thorough history and physical, gets all the details, okay, they can probably eliminate half the things they were going to test for, because they see it's not going to fit. That's why, and I tell people, when you go either to a veterinary behaviorist or a dermatologist, their first appointment is an hour, sometimes even longer. Why? Because they need to get a thorough history and do a thorough exam. Because only then can they decide what is the best test, what is going to fit this history the most, and the most likelihood that they come up with an answer. To just get an animal, so my dog is scratching, and start testing. No, you need so much more. I've had cases where scratching, I look at the skin is beautiful. So I tell him, it's probably not allergy. And what do I find? I say, talk about fleas. No, dog has no fleas. And I'm sitting, and as we're talking, I know there's a flea somewhere there. And sure enough, I find the fleas. You know, it's unbelievable to me. All right, dog is sick, stiff the whole day, Okay, so if this is just an incident that happened, he's 6 years old, then I would think about something he ate, could be a reaction to something, something he did the day before that he hasn't done in a long time. So it's more of a muscle fatigue. And if it is just muscle relaxation, there is a medication though. If everything else is perfect and he's eating and everything else is perfect, he's just very sore, I would be surprised if he didn't have major exertion the day or two before. There's some medication for this just to relax him. You could do like an overall body relaxing, like a trazodone or a gabapentin, or methocarbamol, which is a muscle relaxant, which is probably what I would do first, and see if that works. So got a really good questions here. Can I feed dogs rice? Yes, it's safe, but understand that rice can be too binding. What I don't like when people do, when their dog has colitis, which is inflamed large bowel, and there's a difference between small intestinal diarrhea and large bowel diarrhea. The large bowel diarrhea, you do not like, I don't like to use rice. It's too binding. What we want fiber. We want psyllium. We want cooked oatmeal. You know, we want quinoa, just any kind of fiber, cooked canned pumpkin, sweet potato. You want to get more fiber in the diet. So everything sort of smooths out, and then the ingesta can kind of glide through the colon. The colon can heal on its own without having to work, and then you'll solve the problem. Whereas I find rice is too binding. Now, in small intestinal diarrhea, which is usually much more watery, they're usually sick, they're not eating. With large bowel diarrhea, everything else is perfect except the poop. They're eating, they can't wait for the next meal. They're running around. Small intestinal diarrhea, they're actually sicker. Those cases, I kind of like to use rice as well. For any licking the ground floors or the walls and panting, you know, that is often behavioral. There may be something missing in the diet. They talk about some minerals. There's also something that dogs have called pica, which is the eating or licking of inanimate objects, which could be, interestingly, it could be more of a behavioral, a psychological problem. But if the dog is panting, that usually means nerves, excitement, anxiety. So that also could be anxious. That's more of a behavior issue. So I would check out just to see if, first of all, something like that, it's not harmful. So is it going to continue? If everything else is normal, you know, and it happened just yesterday out of the blue, I think it's either something that was eaten, something that is affecting behaviorally, some sort of stress, anxiety, then that's what I would be thinking. I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't panic right away. Just kind of watch it for a day or two and make sure everything else is normal. Make sure he eats. Go easy on exercise. Make sure nothing outside that's causing major anxiety or in the house, and take it from there. Anyway, we got to take our break on the show. So we'll be right back on Pet Life Radio. Pet Life Radio, Mark, you got your few minutes of commercials, and I will stay here on Instagram and we'll talk during the commercials. Do not go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And there is a thumbs up. All right, so it's a question about Bravecto. A dog may have reacted to it. It was a rescue. It's given the first time. And he's 6 years old. So, you know, on a case like this, you know, could it be a one and done? Yes. There could be other things that have happened. Is it just coincidence? So if he's drinking a lot of water and there was no other reason, then let's see what happens in a few days after the initial medication is resolved. Then it'll tell us the difference between whether it was the actual chew and something in that chew that was causing this, or if it's in the actual medication, the isoxazoline medication in Bravecto, then it should continue for the course, or at least the first week or two. So if it doesn't, it was probably just the chew. If it does, then it's a reaction to the Bravecto, unless something else happened. So then here's where you get kind of gutsy. If there's a possibility that it's something else and you want to brave it, and if the dog did fine after whatever time it was, then do it one more time. If it happens again, then I agree totally, forget about it. Now, or if you want to be extremely cautious, once he gets over this, and I would assume he will, if it was just the Bravecto, then on the next go-round, instead of using Bravecto, use one of the other isoxazolines. You can use Credelio, you can use Simparica, you can use NexGard, etc. So I would do that, and probably if you want to be safer, that would be my recommendation. But you would be wrong, because when something like this happens, there are so many possibilities, so many reasons that stuff like this could happen. It could have been just coincidental, just you gave it, and the dog is now, you just said, you just adopted the dog. There's so many other things in its life right now that are obviously changing, that it could be that he's just stressed out about other things too. A new sound, new smells, new scheduling, new people. It's really hard when you throw something at a dog different and then they start reacting. You have to see which one of the three or four or five things that are different is causing the problem, and it might be very hard to know. So I'm not too worried about it, but those are your choices. Now, if he threw up a whole lot of mucus on the second day, again, if it would happen within the first 24 hours, then I say, oh, it's got to be just the actual chew itself. 2 days later, and it's a new dog, new environment, an adult dog, but in a new environment, there are a lot of other things it could be. I'm not one to panic. If everything else is normal and he can't wait for his next meal, he only vomited the once, you know, I'm thinking it. Also, just keep your mind open. It could be something else. All right. Yorkie is also on multivitamin, had acute pancreatitis, which may have led to the diabetes. He is on insulin twice a day. Good. All right. So good. In that case, you're doing everything right. I don't know when the last time, how long he's been on the insulin. When was the last time he had the glucose checked? But multivitamins are great. I'm a big fan. So you're probably on the right track. As far as the liver is concerned and the thyroid, usually these dogs are usually hypothyroid. So if he's real hypothyroid, now you got to check something. And it aggravates me because I see too much of it. There is something very common in dogs called sick thyroid syndrome. All right. Now, sick thyroid syndrome presents with low thyroid, but that means that the thyroid is low because of other things going on. Well, you just told me you got diabetes. The guy's got liver problems. That low thyroid may not be primary hypothyroidism. It may be just sick thyroid syndrome. And I've seen too many veterinarians that are treating dogs based on a low T4 for hypothyroidism when all it is sick thyroid syndrome and do not need to be on thyroid meds. Then what happens is you create a hyperthyroidism. You're giving them thyroid supplement. So if you're going to, I use T4 in dogs simply as a screen. And if it's low, I don't panic. If I will then do what's called a T4 by ED equilibrium dialysis, okay? And if equilibrium dialysis, which is T4 by ED, is normal, this dog's thyroid is normal. And that low regular thyroid T4 was sick thyroid syndrome. And then also, if they have high TSH, all right, and low thyroid, then we can have hypothyroidism. But if TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, is normal, then I'm not too worried. But if it's low, then that also could be low thyroid. So my favorite test, if I suspect it in a dog or in a cat, well, part of cats, I do T4 and T4 by ED on every cat above 7, period, because hyperthyroidism in cats is very, very common. In a dog, I don't do T4 by ED regularly. I also, when I look, if the regular thyroid is a little low, but other things are going on, I just diagnose it as sick thyroid syndrome and I'll monitor it. If it's really low, less than 0.5, and everything else is normal, then I would do an ED to confirm. But now my hunch is maybe it is true hypothyroid, low thyroid. But in a dog like this, with all these other things going on, I would not treat for thyroid unless more tests are done. He's okay now, though he had that one episode. So with one episode, you know, it's up to you. Look, there's so many really good products on the market. Now, one thing I do like about some of the others that Bravecto doesn't do yet, and that is we are seeing in many local municipalities a lot of heartworm disease. We're seeing more mosquitoes here in Southern California than we've ever seen. So I worry about future heartworm disease issues. The one thing about NexGard, Credelio, and Simparica is they have a product, Credelio Plus, NexGard Plus, and Simparica Trio, that is fleas, ticks, and heartworm. So it might not be a bad idea to try one of the others, especially if you have done a heartworm test recently and it's negative. You want to start treating with heartworm prevention, depending on where you live. But I am, as I said, I've seen a lot more mosquitoes, and I've been thinking about putting my dogs on some heartworm preventative also because we're seeing a lot of heartworm. Okay, so I think I hit everybody here. So anyway, it is that time to say goodbye. Other questions you may have, if it's really urgent, get a hold of me. You can get a hold of me on AirVet. you can get a hold of me here on Instagram or on Pet Life Radio. Pet Life Radio is Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com. And I'll be happy to answer your questions. And, you know, or just things you want to talk about. That's fine. Now, but my take-home lesson, please, please, please. I like when you do research. Even I do research. But I don't consider the research as my final answer. And I'm not going to just go to one source. If you want to get online and go to Dr. Google, check multiple sources, legit sources. Go to the university's websites. Ask the same questions. Go to the pet poison hotline. Ask the same questions. Don't just go with what a non-expert, a non-veterinarian tells you. I have this battle with breeders all the time with vaccine scheduling because many, many breeders are using vaccine scheduling, vaccine that are outdated, that are 20 years old and no longer apply. In fact, not only are they may not be helping, they may be harmful. When they start vaccines at 6 weeks of age in a dog that nursed from mom and they know that, that could be a traumatic problem. So be really careful. And when I talk to breeders and try to give them the new data, what we've learned of late, you know what they tell me? They tell me, look, I've been doing this for 40 years, doctor, and I know what I'm doing. Well, yeah, you may have known 40 years ago, but you don't know now. And the very same reason that when I was in vet school, my mentor, bless her heart, because I was a hot shot and I had a lot of experience going into vet school and did very well in vet school, fortunately. But she goes, Jeff, don't forget, every 5 years, half of what was gospel is now obsolete. So if it's obsolete, then it doesn't apply anymore. If I did not go to CE, continue education, if I did not read and try to stay up to date, if I did not listen to young associates who just got out of vet school and telling me their way of doing things and why, then I do a lot of things today that I never did. And I, more importantly, there are a lot of things I no longer do that I used to do because things change. So when these breeders are not listening to doctors and new things, it just frustrates me. And when these pet experts that have never gone to school and have no training, medical training, are telling dog owners, pet owners, what to do with their pets from a health perspective, does it piss me off a little bit? No, it pisses me off a lot of it. So anyway, be careful out there. Get information. You can reach out to me. Other doctors, I'm sure, will be happy to help you. But make sure you know the source of where the information is coming from and judge based on that. So once again, thanks for joining me here. I'll stay on Instagram for another minute or two. Pet Life Radio, we'll see you next week. I'm going to be heading to Super Zoo in Las Vegas the week after that. We'll be doing a segment on their Fox affiliate on next Wednesday morning. I love working with them. Jason, who I often work with, is great. And Mike, both great pet owners, so pet parents. So anyway, I think the pets own us. Anyway, see you next week. Everybody have a great week, and feel free to reach out to me if you need any help.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.